good morning. It is Thursday, and that means it's time for Perspectives on WFSU-FM. I'm Tom Flanagan. Thank you so much for being on the other end of the radio lines and the telephones and the email machines and the Twitter accounts and the many ways we have to communicate nowadays. 414-1234 is the local number, of course. It's 800-926-8809. If long distance between you and Florida's capital city, the email address, perspectives@wfsu.org, and you can send us a tweet at WFSU Perspective. As we said back before Ronald J's news, this was about, I guess, about a month and a half ago, we had a guest lined up for Perspectives, and through some situation was unable to join us for the program, and we kind of threw open the phone lines rather than canceling things out and sticking with the NPR-related program. And people responded to an open phone type of situation. We got some good discussions going on. So a number of listeners suggested, why don't you try that on a regular basis? So I think we're going to do this quarterly. That's the way we're looking at it right now. So that gives you a chance to plan ahead for those open line kind of situations. And you can just jump on and talk about anything that happens to trip your trigger, as the case may be. So many things going on. Of course, we are ensconced in the legislative session, and our entire WFSU news team is racing about the Capitol right now with so many critical issues coming up, whether it's related to health care, and we can get into a national health care discussion too if you want to. But there are some parts of Florida's health care apparatus that would interface with whatever comes out of D.C., so there's a lot of interest in that. You have, of course, Governor Rick Scott, who has been out on the hustings, as it were, going from place to place around the state, being an advocate for his big economic development priority, which includes things like Enterprise Florida and Visit Florida, both of those organizations dating back to the late 90s. And that was sort of a brainchild of then-Governor Lawton Chiles, who did away with the old Florida Department of Commerce and in its place instituted a number of private-public partnerships to try to spur more economic development, business and industry coming into the state, as well as tourism, also film production and minority sports and all kinds of different things. And Richard Corcoran, the current Speaker of the Florida House of Representatives, is not too kindly inclined towards those things, which he calls essentially corporate welfare and government picking winners and losers. And also, there's been a bit of a battle between him and the governor on that score. Nationally, oh my gosh, coming up this afternoon, big vote on the repeal and replacement mechanism for the Affordable Care Act, what the Republican Congress, with the full backing of President Trump, has come out with as an alternative to what President Obama had put in place 7 years ago today. We're marking that anniversary, and we'll see what's going on and what the actual vote count is. As of this morning, it did not look hopeful for the replacement bill that is before Congress when it comes to health care. And as that vote comes up, one group cannot wait for the replacement. And I'm not talking about the people who have been against it for so long. Owners of tanning salons are just, they are itching for this thing to pass. And here's why. The Affordable Care Act imposed a 10% tax on tanning to help fund some of the provisions of the ACA. And nearly 10,000 salons closed in the U.S. since President Obama's law went into effect 7 years ago. And that represents more than half, about 55% of all salons operating at the time. And those owners now expect some relief with the possible passage of a Republican Replacement Act. That tax was similar to those imposed on tobacco and alcohol and was also meant to discourage a practice known to increase the risk of cancer. American Cancer Society says folks who use tanning salons before the age of 35 can increase their skin cancer chance by like 60%. So they're looking forward to that. And We are inviting you to be part of this conversation, whatever you are interested in at 414-1234, the local number, or 800-926-8809 on this open conversation variety of perspectives. Let's see. Mick says he's looking forward to President Pence. I wonder if that is a little bit speculative. We have not heard anything from the Associated Press that we can expect President Trump to be leaving office anytime soon, but we shall see. We also got an email from Sander, who says, this town could use a combination tea and herb shop. I thought we had a couple of those, but apparently we do not. So if any entrepreneurs are interested in something that looks like it might have some viability in the commercial sector, tea and herb shops don't have those. Boy, a lot of retail establishments, though. Did you hear about that? Business Insider magazine came out with this yesterday and said that there would probably be something like 3,500 mall-associated retail outlets in this country going out of business within the next couple months. And that includes the big anchor stores like Macy's. And, you know, you heard what's going on with Sears, right? They are in very, very deep trouble. Looks like their brick and mortar operation is not long for this world. But even large operations like Dillard's and JCPenney's, they are looking to pull back their presence in the traditional mall arena. And some of the smaller stores like Abercrombie and Fitch and some of those also are going to be cutting back the number of outlets that they have. So that does not bode well for maybe some of the traditional malls like we have here, Governor Square and all that. Center of Tallahassee is trying to reinvent that concept. And we'll see how that goes. To the phones we go. And why is it not a surprise to me that Mr. Mahoney is the first in line on the line? Hi, Reed.
Hey, Tom. How are you, man?
Real fine. Thanks for calling in, man.
Well, anything I can do to help, and or just the case may be. But you know, you made some really good points regarding the upcoming vote today on the repeal and replace of the Affordable Care Act. I can't help but think, based on what I'm hearing, that you know, Paul Ryan is liable to come down with appendicitis about 3 o'clock this afternoon. and that vote is probably going to get canceled because I'm not anticipating that they're going to get enough of these conservatives to turn on this. And I had a conversation with a friend of mine yesterday, and this goes to media coverage of what's going on a national level. If this happens, what we can expect is a major torrent of tweets about a lot of unrelated things. And I think President Trump simply believes that the media have attention deficit disorder. And in some cases, he's proven right, because he can distract you very quickly with a tweet. And so I think it would behoove us to pay really close attention to the important thing and start ignoring what comes out of the White House over Twitter at 6 o'clock in the morning.
Well, let me ask you this, Reed. Do you think that perhaps there's some, you don't want to say blame to go around, but some shared culpability here, because you have a media setup that has always been focused on whatever pronouncement comes out of the White House, mm-hmm. and is trying to continue to cover the president in a traditional way. The president says something, it's important, whether it's the Saturday radio thing, which I think President Trump dropped that. Yeah, I don't think we have that anymore.
I don't think he's doing a Saturday morning or weekly address anymore.
No, I don't think so. But anything that the president said, of course, traditionally, has been fodder for the media to focus on, because it is the president. He said something. It's important.
That's true. And I understand that. But this is not just a different technological age. This is a different type of president. And And I'm just saying, I think we have to be adaptable, and we also have to be a little cognizant, because I think he's pretty shrewd, and what he's doing is a calculated maneuver to get us off subject. Oh, squirrel! They're going, and I think if we just we can certainly pay lip service to it and point it out, because it's news in a ridiculous form or fashion. But I think we need to get back to talking about the issues. I mean, what's going to happen here today in the House of Representatives could be a massive in terms of its effect on people. So, you know, Donald Trump's tweets generally haven't done anything except create a buzz on Fox News and a lot of laughs on late night TV.
Well, it certainly adds to the entertainment of the political situation, you must admit, Reid. So.
Well, it does that. I'll grant you that.
Reid, we sure appreciate hearing from you. Always a good pal.
Good one,
and thanks for being first out of the box here on our open line segment here this morning. Let's go to line three. Roy wants to do something as far as the statewide situation is concerned. Hi, Roy.
Hi, Tom. How are you doing?
Hey, doing fine. Thanks for giving us a ring.
I just wanted to, I know that people like to bash the legislature and, you know, criticize them for all sorts of stuff, but I just want to congratulate them and thank them for a couple of things that they're doing this term. Each house of the legislature has introduced a civics literacy bill. In the Senate, it's Senate Bill 7057, and in the House, it's 1710, and it would require, you know, K through 12, but also colleges and universities to have a civics literacy requirement for students to graduate. And I just think that's a great idea. I mean,
well, great. Roy, hang on. I want to hear a little bit more about this. We have an upcoming timeout that we must take, and then we will be back with more of our open phone scenario here on Perspectives. 414-1234 is the local number, 800-926-8809, long distance, and perspectives at WFSU.org. You hang on, Roy. Back with you in just a moment. Open lines on Perspectives, 414-1234-800-926-8809. And a reminder, you can always find us online at WFSU.org. Just go to our website, click on radio, pull down the programs menu, and up will pop Perspectives. And we archive past shows, try to have the latest program up within a few hours of when it actually airs. I know Roy is gone. He was going in the direction of having maybe a few more offerings into secondary education here in Florida, which the legislature is now advocating. Right, Roy? Let's see. There we go. Roy, you up?
Yeah, I don't know what happened, Tom. I'm sorry. I don't know whether I got anything out or not before I went off. But I just called to thank and congratulate the legislature. I know they get criticized for a lot of things, but both houses have introduced this session civics literacy bills, Senate Bill 7057. And House Bill 1710 that would require a demonstration of civics literacy in both K through 12 and post secondary. And as you know, there is, under the state general education standards, there's no longer a history or a government requirement to graduate. And so it sounds like this is an attempt to remedy that somewhat, and I think they should be congratulated for it. I mean, as you know, back in January, Speaker Corcoran gave an interview in which he talked about the importance of the liberal arts education. It was really great to hear.
Yeah, I remember catching part of that, and you now have also a push for more of the kinds of courses like Beyond Civics and Community Engagement, also History, and kind of more of that old, getting it beyond social studies, getting it back into more of an intensive look at how the world is outside of reading and science and math, which are all very, very important things, but broadening that.
Yeah, this is not just a Florida problem. I mean, this is nationwide. I think I read somewhere the other day that only 18% of colleges and universities require any kind of history course to graduate. And Speaker Corcoran, I think, was exactly right that this stuff is sort of foundational. Plus, as you know, you may not know this, but the Florida Conference of Historians met, I don't know, a couple of weeks ago down in Punta Gorda, and they passed a resolution thanking the legislature and encouraging these two bills and encouraging the teaching of history and so forth in our schools. And I think they're to be congratulated. The Senate bill is sponsored by Senator Stargell, I think, from over in Lakeland, and I've forgotten who's the sponsor of the House bill, but they're both steps in the right direction. And I think politicians get dumped on a lot, but I think that they should be congratulated, you know, when they do the forward thinking right things.
Well, I appreciate that, Roy, and we'll pass that along to Speaker Corcoran and Kelly Stargell and some of the other folks involved with that. I really appreciate your input today. Ann's next up on line two, going to talk about some local stuff here in Tallytown. Hi, Ann.
Hi, good morning. I was concerned about the proposed condominium apartment project in Myers Park, in the park itself, and that got nixed. But now the next suggestion is to have a group home there in the park itself. And people who buy condos in apartments in an area where there's a lot of noise from the amphitheater and from the trains have a choice as to whether or not they want to put up with it. But developmentally disabled people in a group home there would not have a choice about whether or not they wanted to put up with the noise. And I'm thinking about other structures in town that are vacant and that might provide a good setting for a group home, such as maybe the Silver Slipper. And I was wondering if any other of your listeners knew of some vacant buildings that might be utilized for this purpose.
It would seem as though we do have some, what do they call that, surplus commercial development,
we have a lot of it.
Yeah. And while you're on the line, just tap you a little bit here on the city workshop on the trees yesterday.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, any thoughts on that?
Well, I was there. I was glad to see they want to do the urban forest survey. I'm very concerned about the fact they want to extend and promote more pruning, because more pruning doesn't mean better pruning around electric wires. We put together a policy for the electric department some years ago, and it took 2 years to put together, and it's working. And I don't see any reason to extend the distance from power lines from 4 to 6 feet to 8 to 12 feet. That's going to prune trees more. And you know, we all know, or we should know, that the more you prune, the more you weaken the tree. And it seems to me that it's not just branches that fall on wires, it's the total tree. And if it's weakened, we're going to have more trees fall. So I was disappointed at the pruning policy that they adopted. The rest of the workshop, I think, went well. They're going to hold off on the loan program and have it be a little bit more competitive, which is good. And I think the urban forest survey will be a great benefit to everybody.
Well, thanks, Ann. Really appreciate it. And thanks for your comments today here on our Open Line Perspective.
Okay. So thank you. Bye-bye.
We'll see you around. Right. Bill is joining us on line four. Hi, Bill. Bill just dropped. He did want to say something about the unique nature of the Tallahassee area in respect to the universities, which is true. There are only a handful of state capitals, particularly around the country, that have a multitude of higher education options available. You look at places like Columbia, South Carolina, you have the University of South Carolina, and Madison, Wisconsin, you got Wisconsin, and a few others that have a major university, and that's pretty much all she wrote. Here in Tallahassee, we have, of course, FSU, FAMU, and Tallahassee Community College, which are part of a much larger scale. Something else going on. I thought this was interesting. Speaking of growth, all that hoo-ha that was going on down in the Frenchtown area in that 400 block of Macomb Street right across from the Renaissance Center, the Tallahassee City Commission last night delaying a final vote on that piece of property around an acre. They were going to sell it to the developer for, I think, $400,000-some for student housing, and folks in that area of Frenchtown not altogether enamored with that proposal, although growth continues. This in from the Associated Press. Three metro areas in Florida now among the nation's 10 biggest gainers in the number of people moving to them last year, and another three Florida metro areas in the top 10 for overall growth rates. U.S. Census Bureau reporting this week the Tampa area has the nation's fourth highest population gain, adding more than 58,000 residents through migration in the past year. South Florida, number seven nationwide, adding about 48,000 new folks. Orlando, third, 47,000 in our Florida lineup. And then the Villages, which, can you believe it? 25 years ago, the Villages did not exist. If you were going down that section of 441 south of Ocala, and not yet to Leesburg, there was just a big cow pasture in the area where the Villages now exist. And there was a crossroads and, I believe, a few orange groves and a convenience store. And that was all that there was in that area. And all of that development has taken place in the past 25 years. So the Villages had the nation's highest overall growth rate last year at 4.3%. Here in Tallahassee, not quite as many, but we are on a steady growth incline right now, both in residential and also in commercial growth. So that's causing such things as what we've seen in the area around College Town, on Gaines, Madison Street. That construction continues apace. Midtown is expanding a little bit more slowly than that, but student housing continues to be the coin of the realm as far as real estate development in this town is concerned right now. And there has been some concern expressed on the part of some realtors in the commercial arena that maybe there's a little bit too much growth and we could be looking at a student rental housing bubble that is going to burst at some point. Some other things going on in the news besides the legislature in Florida and the vote coming up in the U.S. House of Representatives on a possible repeal and replacement for the Affordable Care Act. A couple more police shootings or shootings involving police officers in the news right now. Authorities say an undercover police officer shot and injured a man in Atlanta after a car crash. This was posted in the Associated Press. Fulton County police officers responding to a report of a theft at a phone store yesterday just south of Atlanta. And the officer was driving his personal vehicle at the time. He followed as a man drove away from the store. Officer called 911 while continuing to trail the man as he crossed into Atlanta. And then the agency says the officer's vehicle and the man's vehicle were involved in a crash. Officer fired a service revolver and hit the man. And the guy continued driving until Atlanta PD caught up with him nearby. He was taken to the hospital. Off-duty officer suffered minor injuries in that. But then in Wisconsin, four people, including a police officer, are dead and a suspect now in custody after shootings at a bank and a law firm in the northern part of the state. That followed a standoff at an apartment complex that ended in a volley of gunfire. So those sorts of things continue apace. Tallahassee police, meanwhile, and the Leon County Sheriff's Office, now under a new sheriff, a guy by the name of Walt McNeil, who used to be in charge of Tallahassee Police Department a number of years ago, looking at ways to perhaps change the training and even the recruitment of some of their officers to have more of a community focus on the response of officers in situations where otherwise guns might be drawn and bullet fire might be exchanged. There was a large deployment of Tallahassee police officers last night, just around a quarter till seven, and that was at Summerhill Road and Orange Avenue. A suspect in some kind of fleeing situation ran off the road. There was a wreck. The gentleman came out of the vehicle. Tallahassee police were on hand. Apparently, he was tased and then taken off to the hospital. And there were something like about 10 units that were there. And we saw that one on the way out of WFSU following last night's Capitol report. A lot of educational things going on at the Capitol. And I don't mean just educational, that it's interesting to see what's going on, but education as it relates to schools. Lynn Hatter's been doing a lot of very comprehensive reporting on Jefferson County school situation. Jefferson now being the first district in Florida that will be going under a charter school governance model. Never been done before in the state of Florida. And that is going to kick off. The kids will be back in school, of course, come August. And there will be a whole new ball game as far as that county's public school situation is concerned, coming under the purview of a charter school rather than the school district as it was before. A Pennsylvania high school student, since there is now under Senator Dennis Baxley a bill that is going through the Florida legislature when it comes to religious freedom and the ability of students and other folks within the public school situation to express their religious affiliation. A Pennsylvania high school student now, according to AP, suing his school district, saying its transgender-friendly policy constitutes sexual harassment and is a violation of privacy. That lawsuit filed this week with the Eastern District of Pennsylvania Federal Court. According to a conservative group that's representing the student called Alliance Defending Freedom. And back in October, the plaintiff, identified as Joel Doe, was changing into gym clothes in the boys' locker room when he saw a student who was wearing shorts and a bra who had recently begun transitioning from female to male, according to the legal counsel for that alliance. And the office of the superintendent of the area school district, which is being sued, declined immediate comment on that. That caused a lot of controversy here in Leon County when the whole transgender bathroom situation emerged not too terribly long ago. No suits pending, but that's something that school districts have had to be wrestling with, among many other situations. As Roy had said before, some changes in curriculum are coming, but you also have some social issues that are facing the schools. What are your thoughts on those? And that's what we're talking about, is your thoughts and your concerns and your comments on the news of the day and anything that you've been hearing in the news at 414-1234 on our open line for perspectives today. 800-926-8809 is the long distance number. And you can also send us an email. We love getting those, perspectives@wfsu.org. Twitter handle is @WFSUperspective, by the way. And we will be going to the phones momentarily. We have a caller on the line. We can go right to them if you would like to do that, Taylor. He's talking to the caller right now. Our crack team of production assistants. Willem is on line one. Hey, Willem, welcome to Perspectives. Thanks for calling.
Absolutely. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure. Go right ahead.
All right. I just wanted to say, and I don't know if a lot of people know about this, but on some of the St. Joe Paper Company property, there's some actually, lots don't know, amazing archaeological ruins out there, both from the Spanish settlement colonization time and also from pre-Columbian settlements, some Native American ruins, and also some plantation ruins. I don't want to give away the locations because I don't want to encourage trespassing or anything like that, but I think it'd really be great if the county, Leon County, and maybe FSU, the archaeology department or something, got with the St. Joe's Paper Company and maybe tried to turn them into parks or something. I don't know, just you said it was open line, talk about anything, and so there you go.
God, that's great, Willem. Well, you bring up a couple good points. We had an author who had written about the old Chairs Plantation there. He had done a significant amount of research and excavation on that. And you're right, you don't want to tell where it is because it's really a restricted area. But we're coming up on the State Archaeology Month observance, as a matter of fact. So so what are some other good places to go digging? Clue us in.
I really don't want to say because, like I said, I don't want to give anything away that I know is on private property. But the plantation that you just referenced is one of the best because the ruins are amazing there. But there are also some sinkholes that are on not the St. Joe's Paper Company, but on private property that have some, if you go diving in there, kind of like you used to have at Wakulla Springs, some really amazing megafauna fossils down there. And there's also some pretty cool stuff around Lake Miccosukee that has to do with the history there, which is really amazing. There was actually briefly a split away town there that tried to secede from the United States. And from it's a little bit too much to go into over the phone right now, but I don't know. I just think people should really look around them. Leon County has amazing history, some of the best in Florida, I'm sure. And I'm someone who loves Florida, and I think people should really take the time to look it up online or at FSU at the archaeology department and get to know your county, get to know your history. You won't regret it.
That is terrific advice, Will, and thanks so much for the input here on our Open Line Perspectives, 414-1234 or 800-926-8809. Conversation up to you for about the next 20 minutes right here on Perspectives. We'll look forward to chatting with you and finding out what's on your mind when we return in just a moment. We are back on our open line version of Perspectives here on WFSU-FM. Thank you for being a part of it, listening, and you can talk it too. The choice of conversational topics, totally up to you today, 414-1234 or 800-926-8809. Hey, Willem was just telling us about all of the interesting archaeological dig sites around the Leon County, Tallahassee area, the seething hotbed of history that we are. The Florida Department of State will be celebrating Archaeology Month, as we mentioned here. I just pulled this up here. Secretary of State Ken Detzner announcing that that month will be observed all month long during March. Some special behind-the-scene tour events in Tallahassee will be promoting that. And let's see what is going on. It will commence at the R.A. Gray Building downtown this coming Saturday. A behind-the-scenes tour. The Archaeological Conservation Lab tours every hour between 10:30 and 2:30, and you can see the way that things are pulled out of the ground and preserved and traced and all of that kind of thing. And you don't normally get to see that. There's also a behind-the-scenes tour at Mission San Luis, which is probably our signature, our crown jewel of an archaeological site as far as preservation is concerned. That's going on every Wednesday this month. Behind-the-scenes tour at Mission San Luis tours at 11 o'clock every Wednesday. So lots of wonderful things that you can check out as far as history is concerned. And if you want to do something a little bit more contemporaneous, this afternoon at 2 o'clock, the Jackson View Landing out on North Monroe is going to reopen. Leon County inviting folks to come out to that sort of a reopening of the Jackson View Landing that's off of Highway 27. They have improved the entire area around there, so if you're going to do any fishing on Lake Jackson, it's a much more amenable place, and they have free refreshments too. That always gets folks out and interested as well. So that's going on this afternoon, 2 o'clock out there on North Monroe Street. Now let's say hi to Rita, who is on line one. Thanks for calling, Rita. Welcome to Perspectives.
Well, good morning. I just wanted to say thank you to the city of Tallahassee for the walkway on Monroe Street from Lake Ella over to the public shopping center. I think it's a wonderful thing.
Boy, that got a that's a good point, Rita. Many motorists I talked to were just incensed about that it was yes. confusing.
My condolences to rush hour traffic, but I'm telling you that it is such a progressive idea to encourage people to walk and get out and not start up the car to go a mile. I mean, I'm just thrilled.
Oh, well, that is great. Well, I'm sure that we always have at least one city commissioner who tends to listen to this program. Maybe they just picked up on that, and they'll pass that along to the folks who are in charge of the overall transportation plan. But I'm glad you enjoy it, Rita. Thanks for letting us know.
Thank you for letting me on.
Okay. Bye-bye. There was something else we wanted to mention. This was out of yesterday. The League of Women Voters had their regular monthly luncheon meeting, and a local ecologist by the name of Pam showed up to make a presentation before them when it comes to a long-range plan to improve the quality of water that underlies this part of the world, which, as you know, is the entire Floridan aquifer and our little part of it under Leon and Wakulla counties, has been in better shape. And what happened as far as documenting the impact of that was to see the amount of algal growth that is in places like Wakulla Springs, which used to have a pretty diversified kind of plant life in the Springs area, and now so much of it is covered by algae. As you may recall, years ago, the city of Tallahassee spent millions and millions of dollars to retrofit the spray field out on Tram Road to reduce the amount of pollution that was going into the ground from that point source. And indeed, that has been effective. But what's causing the big problem now, more than half of the pollution in the form of nitrates and other things that causes algal growth, I guess, is coming from malfunctioning septic tanks. And if you have a septic tank, as many, many thousands of people in this part of the world do, you know that you have to keep up with the maintenance, and occasionally it fails completely and has to be replaced, and it costs thousands and thousands of dollars. So that is the quandary that's now facing water managers and local officials in this part of the world, because so much of that pollution gets down through what they call the karst structure, that overlay of limestone that's almost sponge-like in its arrangement, and then goes straight into the aquifer from whence we derive all of our drinking water. And you can see the result of that in places like Wakulla Springs, where the water emerges back from the underground karst formations. So the idea now being to perhaps do a comprehensive look at what is really going on as far as ways to turn that around without dumping thousands and thousands of dollars worth of septic tank rehabilitation on individual families, many of whom in the south part of Leon County and into Wakulla County may not be in the best fiscal shape to take care of that kind of retrofit. So do you create some kind of a larger sewer system utility that would operate across the two counties? A lot of discussion still has to go on there, but it is causing some pollution problems, as we know, not just in areas like Wakulla Springs, but in our entire drinking water area. And to fix that would cost a lot more than just rehabilitating a couple of sewer systems. So that discussion is going to be ramping up again. We have a few other things going on in the news that you may want to talk about, as far as whether it's national or state or local, here on WFSU's Perspective. Speaking of national, a Hawaii lawmaker, there's been lots of talk, of course, about different people switching parties as a result of what's going on with national politics. But Associated Press reporting a Hawaii lawmaker who says she was pressured to give up her leadership post at the State House after criticizing President Trump is now leaving the Republican Party. Representative Beth Fukumoto resigned from the GOP yesterday because she says its members refuse to oppose what she calls racism and sexism, and she's hoping to become a Democrat, but she does not know whether or not the Democratic Party will accept her. So she has to meet with the Democratic officials in Hawaii to see if she can become a member of that party, because she doesn't want to be a Republican anymore. Bruce is on the line on our open line edition of Perspectives. Hi, Bruce. Hello, Bruce.
Yes, hello.
Yeah, go right ahead, sir.
Well, I just wanted to mention there's a situation that a lot of people in Tallahassee aren't familiar with. Everybody knows about Lake Jackson and work that's been done over the years to help it out, basically, you know, with the lake going dry and then a lot of invasive exotics and the work they did on the bottom a few years ago. There's a part of Lake Jackson that is south of U.S. 27, south of that new landing, or the renovated landing that went in there, that is entirely eutrophic. I mean, there's a pool of water that stays deep most of the year, almost all year, even when the other part went dry. But that part that backs up to Old Bainbridge Road, and people aren't familiar with it because it's just not, it's not publicly accessible, and that's why the state can't get in there and do the work in there, the environmental work that they need to do to save the lake. And a number of homeowners who live on that lake, who live on that end of the lake, have gone together to do some work on their own, clearing out some of the floating tussocks, the hydrilla, and a lot of the invasive exotics that are out there. And I would first of all like to, you know, say how valuable this effort is, and people are taking it on themselves. In fact, they have to purchase or pay for a permit to do the work themselves. And I just want to, you know, congratulate them for their efforts and, you know, point out that this is a, you know, it's kind of an above and beyond effort by those homeowners at their own expense. You know, the equipment and everything that needs to go in there to do the work and everything. So I just wanted to put that out there, let people know that it's happening, and maybe get some support behind it for those people, because they are shouldering quite an expensive burden on their own shoulders.
Well, boy, isn't that a gratifying response to a problem where folks kind of get together and say, well, someone's got to do it. Let's all of us get together and try to fix that ourselves, huh?
That's true, and the state would like to do it, I think, or at least they've indicated they would in the past, they are not able to because there's no public access. Many years ago when they built U.S. 27, they built it over the lake there, and the plans originally called for a bridge. And of course, you know, as you may know, there's just a culvert there. They kind of shortchanged it because that happened during the 30s during the Depression, and I guess it was cost avoidance. But you know, it's basically strangled that portion of the lake over the years, and a lot of the homeowners over there are not wealthy people, but they remember, many of them remember it from childhood as a place where they could fish, and there's a lot of wildlife, still is a lot of wildlife out there. And through their efforts, you know, hopefully some of this will be saved. And I'd just like, again, to let your audience know about that effort.
That is terrific, Bruce. I'd love to talk to some of those folks. Maybe off air a little bit later, you want to give me a call, and we'll see if we can track down some of those folks maybe and do a story on them, congratulating them for their involvement and go-gettedness, if we can even use that term there. They saw a need, and they got together, and they made it happen, and we need more of that, huh?
I think we do, and I'm one of those homeowners, so I certainly would be in a position to tell you whatever you need to do. I'm the one who applied for the permit with the state and the county. So
you're the guy I need to talk to. Bruce, thanks so much.
You're welcome.
Look forward to our discussion a little bit later on here on Perspectives. Bruce brought up a great point, too, and that is something that we're seeing in our community right now in response to so many kinds of things, and whether it's the national political situation or what's going on at the legislature or anything else, so much of what is being done is done on the local level. Yeah, we all get hyperventilated about what's going on in Washington, and oh, did you hear the latest out of the legislature today? And we all get sucked into that. We sure do. But when it comes to meeting rubber meets the road problem situations, so much of it, in fact, the majority of it, is done at the local level. As Bruce said, people who get together, they see that there's a need, and they join forces, they form coalitions, they get the neighbors involved, and if government can help, fine. If not, they'll find a way to make it happen themselves. And that's kind of taken democracy back to the old school situation. Here's an email that just popped up here. Does the city commission ever look into the possibility of a housing bubble? Seems like that should be a role for the city government. Most likely, and I'm not speaking on behalf of government for sure, but you do have a combined city-county planning apparatus or mechanism that does things like, if you have a commercial development, you have to go before the growth management folks that are down there at the Renaissance Center, and you file your plans, and you have your consultants, if you have any, come in with all of the paperwork, and there's a multitude of things that have to be done in order to get any project approved, and that is where most of those things take place. But by the same token, if you remember what happened in this area back in the 1980s, this was a rapidly growing town, and many of the companies that operated convenience stores decided that Tallahassee, Florida, and the surrounding area was just an absolute dynamo of growth and prosperity and a great place to put a convenience store. And lo and behold, on some of our major and in many cases not so major intersections, you had on every corner, all four corners, a convenience store. And within 6 to 8 months, at least two of those stores were out of business and remained unoccupied and abandoned and derelict, in some cases for a long time before someone came in and rebought the property and put something else on it. Because everyone's econometric studies were done in isolation. Nobody coordinated this and said, okay, are you building? Oh, okay, well then we'll hold off on that area. We'll go someplace else. That doesn't happen, of course. And that originally was the function of growth management, to try to maybe apportion those kinds of developments in a little bit more intelligent way, so you didn't have these bubbles popping up, whether it were convenience store bubbles or now we could say mattress store bubbles. Boy, we have a bunch of those out there now, don't we? Or any of the other kind of bubbles that are going on. So in response again to that email, I would imagine that's something for growth management to get into. But city and county commissions need to be apprised of that thing as well. And if I can throw in a plug again for the size of the community that we are, it makes it so much easier to get before a member of the city or the county commission. I was telling Taylor Cox, our producer here, before we went on the air last night, oh gosh, it's about 11:30, I'm on my way home. And I'm getting gas at a store, and suddenly right in front of me is a member of the county commission who was getting gas right in front of me. And we yacked a little bit about what was going on at the legislature and what he's involved with, and exchanged some pleasantries and went on. Do you realize how rare that is when you look across the entire nation? And as urbanized as so many of our places are, try doing that in a place like Tampa or Orlando. You very seldom see a high-ranking elected official in an unguarded way, like when you're pushing your cart down the supermarket aisle and you bump into a city commissioner. You say, boy, you know, out in some flooding in our area and it's driving us all crazy. And at least you get a hearing before that individual. And there's a chance that something may come up. Or if you want to go to any of the multitude of meetings we have, yes, I know they can be mind-numbingly less than interesting, if I can be diplomatic on that score. But you have a chance to go and be heard. And that is something that is restricted in many other jurisdictions where you don't have that opportunity to get up in front of the folks who actually control the purse strings and the priorities and all of that that happens on the local government thing. Hey, thanks so much for joining the conversation today on Perspectives. I think every quarter we're going to do this and let it open to your proclivities and your concerns as to what's going on and what you think about it right here on Perspectives, which is produced by WFSU-FM. FM in Tallahassee. Taylor Cox and Lydell Rawls pushing the buttons, and I'm Tom Flanagan. Stomp Out Diabetes is going to be our next topic on Perspectives a week from now. Childhood obesity, the local numbers are out. They are staggering. We got to talk about that, and we will next week here on Perspectives.
Copies of Perspectives are available by calling 1-800-829-8809. Log on to WFSU.org for online archives and podcast. Perspectives is a production of 88.9 WFSU-FM, Tallahassee.